Correctly with the correct amount.
D20 Radio, your gamer's role.
www.d20radio.com.
Welcome to the Save or Die Podcast, a podcast about classical Dungeons and Dragons. If it's in a box, we'll talk about it.
Welcome back, folks, to the Save or Die Podcast with a proper introduction this time. Then we're recording, Mike, so just so you know.
Ha ha ha.
I am DM Vince.
Picking on me because I thought we were recording, like, 5 minutes ago.
Yeah, he was talking and going, are we actually doing a show or not? But anyway, you see, as you can hear, I'm DM Vince, and DM Mike is here, as always, and we're missing a voice this week. And wait, oh, here she comes. Hello, I am DM Liz! No, not really. She's not here.
No, you're not.
She's,
I disbelieve.
Oh, did you roll?
Yes.
Oh. You failed. She's actually here. Hello! No.
No. No, she's been caught by the mother,
yeah,
having to do mother-daughter stuff this weekend.
So you're just going to have to deal with the two guys this week. Yeah, this is the Man Podcast. Puh. Anyway.
God, I hope not.
And so this is episode number, or I should say adventure number 8. Saverdie.info is the website. You can go there and read some. I'd like to take a moment actually to say the Secret DM has been writing some articles on our website. I don't know if you had a chance to read some of them, Mike.
Oh, yeah.
He's doing a good job. I really like his articles, and he's doing it bi-weekly and sometimes weekly, depending on his schedule. He's very busy. But hop by the site and comment on his article, because the more you comment, the more he has encouraged to write. And he has, I think his latest one is Get a Job, Bilbo, or something.
Yeah, Hey Bilbo, Get a Job. I like that one.
Yeah, that one was a good article. So he's doing a good job, and I appreciate him volunteering to write for the website. And keep up the good work, man. The Secret DM, you can find him on Facebook. I guess facebook.com/TheSecretDM. He has a fan page, and he has his own personal page. And to be honest, I don't even know who the Secret DM is. It's a secret.
It's a secret. You're not supposed to know.
Yeah. He's marketing himself as the Secret DM, so let's just keep it that way. A big secret. And we'll, as we go on, just check us out in Dragon's Foot forums, as we got our own little space at the very bottom, the Save or Die forums. A lot of feedback in there recently. We got a lot of emails, but we're just holding off on emails right now to do the another side adventure, because people seem to have really enjoyed that with all the feedback we've gotten. Right, Mike?
Yep. Yep. I think they just like hearing Liz read the letters, but we'll see.
I don't know. Maybe. Who knows? And, oh, yeah, did I mention we don't like 4th edition? Oh, whoop, did I say that? No, I'm just kidding. No,
bad Vince. Bad Vince.
We love other editions. I was just playing with the people out there listening, saying stop the hate, but we love them.
Well, on my end, there's no hate. If people prefer post-2000 versions of D&D, more power to them. Great. Enjoy it. I personally just don't.
No, I don't actually hate the post-2000 editions. I actually played 3rd edition probably a long time, well after it was under, and probably to this day, every once in a while, our group does play 3rd edition, a custom 3rd edition. It's just really, they think it's very simple to play, so, I mean, I'd rather play than not play.
Mm.
Don't you agree?
Well, you play, don't you play Pathfinder?
No, we were playing Pathfinder for a while.
Ah, okay. Or is that what you meant, custom 3rd edition?
No, custom 3rd edition is in the DM who's running it. Basically just took the core mechanics, and he made up his own stuff with the game. Like, the classes are a little bit wacky. I was playing a paladin that was lawful evil. So, and okay. He had, like, special, like, there was a vampire in the game, and then there was, the clerics were not clerics. He mixed the class of magic user and cleric into one, and they were called high mages and or low mages, depending on what society they came from. So mm-hmm. either they would they had the ability to cast both sides of the spectrum of spells, but it depended on what society you were brought up in, and if you can actually cast it, or you had to roll if there was a wild magic effect to the spell. So it was kind of interesting. Okay. He never actually wrote up the whole entire class, but we kind of played it as we went, and it was fun. I have to say it was a lot of fun playing that class.
Mm.
So, I mean, it's something different.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't think I've played... The only thing I haven't played in probably 10-plus years is second edition.
Mm.
I played it maybe a whole bunch of times when I was in high school. And that was it. Once the group dissipated, it was the end of playing second edition. I went back to first edition when I found another group.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, back to classic Dungeons & Dragons, the best game in the whole entire world.
Yes. All of them.
So, while we're babbling on here, Mike, why don't we head down to the Cauldron Room, minus Liz. Hello, I'm Liz! No, I'm just kidding. And let's
better
see.
Better not find pieces of Liz floating in the cauldron.
No, we like Liz. We wouldn't want that, Mike.
No, definitely not. She feeds me.
She feeds you. And the cats, too, right?
Oh, yeah. Hopefully in that order.
No, it's the cats and then you.
Yeah, probably.
So, now that we're down here in the cauldron, close the door behind us. What have you done classical lately, Mike?
Well, I was recently on the OD&D Guild, a Yahoo group.
Oh, I like that group.
About the classic Dungeons & Dragons. Somebody posted a supplement. Remember when I talked about Carcosa last episode? Somebody did up that like a supplement to Brown Book D&D?
Yes, yes, yes.
Well, somebody did a fan version for free called Supplement A Barsoom.
Really?
Yeah. Basically with the John Carter Warlord of Mars stuff.
Oh, okay.
And
okay.
It's kind of a combination of that the old TSR miniatures rules called Warriors of Mars for Barsoom, but done up as if it was a D&D supplement for gaming on Barsoom. And I've been reading that this week, and it's pretty cool. It's only like 30 pages, maybe even less.
Yeah.
Simple, but it's got nifty information in it, some stuff that would be fun just to import into a D&D game.
So, based on what you've read so far, how many dragons?
Not a one. Not a one. It's all the Barsoomian monsters in the book. Though, of course, they say, you know, you want to introduce anything from D&D, that's, you know, a cinch.
No, I meant how many dragons you're going to raid it.
Oh, okay. I thought you meant, did it have any dragons in it?
No, you missed. Yeah, I figured you misunderstood me there.
Reading it, I'll say a 3.5.
Okay.
Maybe a 3.
Okay.
It's probably ranks higher, but I hate ranking it higher without actually playing some of the special rules and seeing if they work.
Okay.
But, yeah. I mean, and it's free. I mean, you can't beat free.
So where can I get one, or where can one of our listeners get one?
It's on the Grey Elf site. I don't have his address directly with me, but I'll send it to you so you can put it up on the show notes.
Is that the Grey Elf lair?
Probably, yeah.
I think if you do a Google search, it comes right up. I'm pretty sure about that, but...
Okay.
I think I've been in the site many times.
Okay, then yeah, that's almost certainly it, so...
Awesome.
It's cool. If you're a fan of Burroughs and the old Barsoom Warlord of Mars stuff, it's cool. It imports an honor system, but does it differently than the Oriental Adventures one for first edition.
Oh, cool.
Particularly the way of dealing with battling enemies and such.
Hmm. All right.
Oh, and you don't wear armor, which is very Barsoomian.
I have to take a look at this. It sounds kind of interesting.
Yeah, it's cool.
Maybe we'll have to have the person who wrote it have a little chat with us one day about this.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
See what his future plans are, if he's going to do anything else with it. That'd be a cool idea. If he's listening, hopefully maybe he'll write into us saveordiepodcast@gmail.com. So what have I been doing this week?
What have you been doing this week?
Actually, I've been in contact with Miss Jean Wells, and she is mailing me a whole bunch of stuff through the mail, actually, of the next step of her module she wants to do. Yes, you heard it. She wants to do another module. She doesn't really want to charge anything for it other than maybe print on demand, I think, basically. She's not looking out to get any money, but she just wants to continue, I guess, the other half of her module that she had originally produced. It was more to it she wants to throw out there. And I believe we will need some help with this. So if anyone wants to assist in editing this all together, give us an email and we'll talk about that. I know Thorkhammer on the Dragon's Foot Forum was asking if he can assist in anything that she had to do because he's a big fan of hers.
Yeah.
So if he writes in, then definitely he's got his spot right there. Because I know he said, I believe he said that in the questions thread. So.
Yeah. And Peter did, I think, in the last mail episode.
Oh, good. Okay, Peter too. Cool.
From Blood Moon Rising. Yeah.
Which he also he also sent us another module to review. I believe it was called The Lost Heroes Inn.
Yeah, I got that. I haven't had a chance to look it over yet, but maybe for the next episode.
Yeah, I just pulled it off DriveThru. He sent us the copy through DriveThru, and I pulled it down and I sent you the copy so we can review it for the next show. It looked pretty cool. That's all I'm going to say right now. It looked cool, and we appreciated you giving us a copy to review, a review copy. Thank you very much.
Most excellent.
Yeah. Small Niche Games is his little company. Pretty cool. So that's what I've been doing all week, is communicating back and forth, getting the information. And right now it's just a bunch of garbled information because it's just a lot of emails and stuff. So once it gets narrowed down, we can start hacking it out and getting this module printed up.
A pity she can't put out her Palace of the Silver Princess.
Wow.
But the copyright issues now would be really rough to get over, but it's a pity nonetheless.
She probably could put out her module, but then she'd have to go through all the runarounds and the redoing this and that, and just to, you know, fall under the open gaming license.
Yes, the Castle of the White Queen or something like that, instead of Palace of the Silver Princess.
Yeah, and she's not. She doesn't really want to do all that. That's why she's asking us on the podcast to take whatever she has and just format it so we can send it out there for people to have and enjoy. She just wants to. Pretty much, she just wants to write ideas down, and she doesn't want to have to deal with all the open gaming license right now. So she's going to employ some help.
Cool.
I know she's also writing. She said she was writing a book, so fans of hers can look forward to her book coming out, I think, in a year or so. She didn't have an actual name for it that she told me, but if I find out, I'll let you know out there.
Yeah, didn't she collaborate with Andre Norton on the Return to Quag Keep?
I think so, maybe. I'm not positive on that.
That's something we ought to review sometime, is Quag Keep and Return to Quag Keep.
All right, put it on the docket, Mr. Show Notes.
Okay. In our copious amounts of free time, yeah.
All right, cool. So I think we'll head into Game On, and that'll be the end of the cauldron. Let's get out of here before, you know, it bubbles over. So, Game On. What do we have this week, Mike?
That's a very good question.
I know what it is. I know what it is.
Well, then tell me, because I don't have the show notes up.
PCs with personalities.
Ah, okay.
You wrote
that. Pretty sad, because I was the one that wrote that down, so.
Well, I know. You wrote this, like, 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, and I, like, do 3 episodes ahead of time, and then we change them repeatedly before actually broadcasting, so it's like,
That's why I was like, why would you do that? I mean, you're like, okay, here's no show notes for 6, 7, 8, and 9. I'm like, Mike, we're only on like 5. Relax.
Well, because then I figure you guys will look at it, and if any of you look at it and say, that's crap, we really should do this, it's like, okay, we got ahead of time, and we can... That's the theory anyway, but yeah. Hey, I'm a college teacher. I can't help it. I have to plan in advance.
Mister, here's my syllabus for the class, and...
Yeah. Half of it will be changed before the third week.
Yeah, right.
But read it now, because... That way you'll know what was changed. Yeah, right.
Exactly. So, PCs with personalities, Mike, what was the thought process behind this segment?
Well, I've heard a lot of arguments over the years mm-hmm. that, you know, some people like coming up with elaborate backstories for their characters.
Right.
And then others just say, you know, that's Bob the Fighter or Bart the Magic User, and... They figure, you know, that's all that really matters. Then there's a third school that kind of combine them by saying, you know, it's going to be Bart the Fighter at level 1. If he lives till 3rd or 4th level, then I'll start developing a backstory for him.
Hmm. I have to, yeah, I understand what you're saying here. There's 3 different schools of, basically, we're just going to play this character as Shmooey the Shmooey. And we don't care what happens, because we're pretty much probably not going to play this character ever again, more than likely, or he may just die. Or this is a one-shot, so what's the point of actually putting some effort into him? Then we have the people that come to the group, and here's my character, Reverend Hang-On Bob Shmooey Jr. with a 10-page background history at first level.
Yeah, and then he hit a trap, he's dead.
Yeah.
And a lot of, not always, but a lot of times those players kind of go, what?
Yeah.
But, well, sorry.
Yeah. And then you have the third class that you said, I'll develop some information right now, but I won't develop anything and I'll just do it as he goes.
Yeah.
I think I fall into the as he goes category.
Mm-hmm.
With the amount of games that I play and switching back and forth, I like to make an elaborate backstory, but I wouldn't mind with my character, like, you know, he was born here, you know, his father was this, his mother was that, he did this for a living. I kind of like doing that stuff, but if I know the adventure is going to be 1-2 weeks and then people are going to be like, meh, and not want to play anymore, why am I going to put the effort into it? I could see that point of view also.
Right, you know. Of course, one could argue then, in that case, why not just use pregens?
Yeah, you could just... Yeah, that's also, maybe that's a fourth school, using pregens or not pregens.
Yeah. Of course, I know a lot of players who, you know, just have this aversion to pregens. I want to roll my stats.
Yeah, you know why people have, you know those people that are aversion to the pregens are the people that want powerful stats because they want to roll their 16, 18 characters?
18, 18, 16, 18. No, I rolled these at home.
Yeah, sure you did.
Of course you did.
And of course,
yeah, well, that trap, you still died, so.
Yeah. Or like in the Dark Dungeons cartoon, you died! What? Roll versus death. No, wait, you don't get a saving throw. Never mind, he's dead.
Never mind, he's dead.
Yeah. No.
Black Leaf.
Yeah, Black Leaf. That's a great little cartoon. I don't know.
It is. I know Jack Schick didn't mean it to be, but gosh, it's hilarious.
Oh, boy. And the MST3K1 version of that is even better. I love that.
Oh, yeah, that's the one where there's the picture of them supposedly in the evil satanic rite, and it's like, what's going on here? Oh, we're just playing some live-action Call of Cthulhu.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, man, I missed that show in Mystery Science Theater. Oh, man.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, we're going off on tangents, but so back to PCs.
No way. Not us.
No, not us at all. We never do that on Save or Die Podcast.
Ever.
Ever. I think I have to fall into the category of go as they make the background up as we go. I mean, unless it's one of those elaborate games that you need a background. Because I've seen DMs say, well, all right, here's the game. We're going to be starting at first level. If you want to play in my campaign, you have to have at least a page background story.
Yeah. Then I used to be one of those guys, actually.
Yeah.
Then I developed a system to where I had a background worksheet. Mm. And if you wanted, you didn't have to fill out anything except the name and, you know, maybe a sentence. Then every level you went up, you had to fill out one additional section.
Oh. That sounds kind of
eventually,
cool.
Huh?
That sounds cool.
I thought it was, but I've discovered you've really got to know your group.
Yeah.
Because there are some people, in this case, two of the players, a husband and wife team. Hi, Connie and Alan, if you're listening. Who, you know, good players and all, but they just wouldn't develop any background. You know, it's like Connie's playing her elf character, Alan plays his dwarf, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah, there's some people who just want to play. They don't want to bother with all that.
Right. They don't want to go into deep backstory. Liz, now that she's not here, I'll pick on her. She loves backstory.
Hello, I hear you, Michael. Hello.
Well, I just heard the front door slam. So.
Dun, dun, dun. Yeah.
But yeah, she loves backstory. On the other hand, she doesn't throw any fits if one of her characters gets killed.
Not at all.
Oh, well.
Not at all, for the many comments of the rats and the centipedes that she keeps yelling about.
Well, and again, that's an advantage to Classic. It's a lot cheaper to get resurrected in Classic than it is, say, in the advanced versions.
Yeah.
I don't know about post-2000 D20 and 4s and whatnot, but yeah, it's not that expensive. I mean, it's not the cash an average player is going to have in his back pocket, at least not till he hits middle levels, but you could save up and get that person resurrected.
Honestly, when in third edition, I don't remember because I've never died that often in third when I played it. Mm-hmm. And as far as fourth, it's pretty much so hard to die anyway that with all the special powers.
It's a non-issue.
Now. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure someone's going to say, ha, you can die in fourth edition, blah, 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 but I don't care. It's still a lot harder to die in fourth edition than it is in basic. There's so many things you have in fourth edition to protect you than when basic you have 4 hit points.
Yeah.
You have your dagger.
AC9, 4 hit points, a dagger, and push as your spell.
Yeah, or, and the rain hits you the wrong way and you die.
Or light, or something equivalent. Yeah, and
It's like, it's a strong gust of wind. You take 4 hit points. Oh, I'm dead.
4 points. Of course. Yeah, and I mean, you know, some of the old Judges Guild for D&D, mm-hmm. I mean, you know, half the NPCs in there had 1 or 2 hit points. Like, yeah. Sneeze on them and they're dead.
Achoo! Yeah. So, do you still have that worksheet, by the way, Mike?
Yes, I do.
Oh, great. Forward me a copy so I can put it on the website, because I'm sure some people will be interested in taking a look at that.
Okay. I'll do so. Drop me an email to remind me in case I don't do it. I'll try and do it as soon as the show's over. But again, yeah, it's one of those you've got to know your players, and if you try to strong-arm them into it, yeah. They can get resentful, you can lose your players, and just not worth it in the long run.
With my group, it's just backgrounds are nothing. I can't even get them the right backgrounds up for a friggin' vampire when we play vampire. And you know how much role-playing heavy vampire is.
Yeah, definitely.
I tell them write up a background, I get groans, and it's just like, okay, fine. They list mother, father, brother, why they died, if they're alive, and what their job was. Here's my background.
Or the best one, orphan.
Yeah.
Family killed by ex, vows revenge. Goes around in black all the time. Yeah, yeah, pretty much. And that's not just vampire. I could put that in most any RPG, and I could say I've played with somebody who's done that.
I can understand.
I've had people do that in Star Trek. I mean,
I haven't played too much Star Trek.
I missed. Well, I played the old FOSSA classic version.
Oh, I missed that.
Yeah, I never really played Next Gen, and you know, it was okay to watch as a show, but the universe never really appealed to me to game in.
Oh, you talking about the Lug or the Decipher game? I don't know which one it was. Lug or Decipher had Next Generation. I can't remember.
Yeah,
which.
Whichever one. Yeah, it just. I don't even know if the systems may have been wonderful, but I'm just sure. The universe didn't grab me.
Yeah, the FASA ones, I played those, and I had a lot of fun playing with those. Yeah. It's just so much fun playing those games. I miss
them. It was a wilder and woolier time, you know, in the Star Trek universe, so you could just go and get into fist fights with Klingons and bars, you know?
Mm. And those were heavy on backgrounds, too, anyway.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the development of the system, you know, as far as the characters, required so much that you almost had a background explained just by your skill sets and everything.
I just always went with PCs that wound up as, like, lieutenant or higher. I think I managed to get a Commodore out of one of them.
Nice.
Yeah.
But. Traveler, though, was the best, because even just rolling up your character by figuring out what happened to them before they got out of their service was almost a custom-made background right there with very little work.
I heard that you can, if you roll the wrong way, your character could be dead even before you play the game with Traveler.
Yep.
What's the point of that?
It's a balancer. Because the longer you stay in a service, the more skills you get.
Yeah.
But it's to make sure everybody's not playing 60-year-old guys with, you know, 8,000 skills. Is to put in something in there, there is a chance you will die, and you'll have to start over. So the players, when rolling up their characters, have to decide, how long am I going to stay in before I'm going to go, okay, that's enough, I'm getting out to play. To actually play this character.
I see. I've never played Traveler, so I don't know.
Okay. Yeah. I like it. I think it's great. Though I will admit, when I ran it, whenever they got the death, I allowed them to do like what equated to a saving throw.
Right.
And if they failed it, then they're dead, but otherwise they like took a couple of points of permanent con damage or something, or got a cybernetic arm or something.
Interesting. That's a way to compromise, I guess.
Yeah. I don't like the new Traveler, which I have heard it's impossible to die now. It's just con damage. Or something like that. I'm not sure what, but I think that's kind of weak. But
I saw the new books when I was at Gen Con. There's like three of them. I think three core books. Or maybe, I could be wrong. I don't know. I know nothing about Traveler. I looked at them after I heard a bunch of people talk about it, and I'm like, I didn't feel like spending, like, what was it, $40 per book?
Yeah, I got a copy of the Mongoose Rules. I think it is just one book.
Oh, was it?
Or just general rules, but there's a separate Starships book, I think. Very Star Frontiers that way, I guess. But I got a copy, but I got it used for like less than half price. So yeah, I wouldn't have paid $40 for it because I've got all my old Traveler books. So what do I need that for? But I did it just to be a completist.
Well, yeah, that's usually what happens with most of us grog, so.
Yeah. Anyway, back to backgrounds.
Actually, these are kind of relevant because it we are talking about background history games, so.
Yeah, and I don't remember. I guess I did put it in an issue of Footprints way back when. Is I took the Traveler system to D&D. To where you could basically roll up your own background for your character. Basically, instead of the normal system in the back of the DMG, where you just kind of roll up a middling high-level character on the spur of the moment.
Right.
This one used the Traveler system, to where it actually gave you a sort of a background. You're not just a fifth-level fighter that appeared out of nowhere. You've got a backstory going with you.
I have, I think I've talked about it before, it's by that book by AEG, the big black book toolbox kit book.
Huh.
AEG sent it to me a while ago when I was doing another podcast as a promotional item.
Mm-hmm.
And it had, I think it's like 500 pages of 10 years of research. And you can roll up a background in the book, starting from the first part of it, from like the character first born all the way up until like designing towns and cities and nations, and it's an amazing book. It's for the D20 system mostly, but I don't see why it's for just D20 because there's nothing core mechanic D20 about it. It's all just background stuff.
But is it specifically for a genre or is it multi-genre?
It's mostly just fantasy.
Still,
it's a great book.
Pages though makes me wince.
But it's really detailed. If you want to sit there, if you're bored one Saturday afternoon, and you're like, say you're waiting for your players to show up, and there's one player there, you could sit there the whole afternoon and roll, and just constantly make up stuff for your character. And just
or follow. Towns, as you said, towns and cities, yeah. And
I actually took it one Saturday afternoon while I was waiting to go out, and I rolled up a whole entire nation. Wow. It took me about an hour, but by the time I was done, I had a whole page and a half. And looking back over it, I had like this was that. The land was laid out like this. This was the person in charge of that. This is the way the people felt about that. It was really detailed.
Do you have that still?
Oh yeah, it's sitting on my shelf. It's a big, thick. It's not a hardcover book. It's a softcover book.
No, I mean the nation you rolled up.
Oh no, that's long gone.
Oh okay. I was thinking that might be a good thing to post as a sample. But it's called the AEG Toolkit?
I think it's called the Toolbox Kit, yeah.
Toolbox.
Yeah.
Is AEG still around?
Yeah, yeah, they're still around. They make, I forget what they're publishing now, but they are still around.
They are still around, okay. I wasn't sure if they had gone under during the D20 bust or not.
No, because I got the book only about maybe 2 years ago.
Okay.
And it's not a cheap book.
Yeah, for 500 pages, I wouldn't think so.
It's actually, for a soft cover book, retail price is $50 for it.
How?
Yeah, I remember looking at that, I'm like, holy cow, that's not a cheap book.
No, and softback.
Yeah.
Has it held together? I mean, a lot of times with softbacks, the pages are very easy to come out.
No, it's held together, and I've not used it. I've used it a bunch of times.
How many dragons would you give it?
Four.
Four?
Mm-hmm.
Even with a $50 price tag?
Well, if you buy it directly from AEG, it's going to be $50. But I think if you go to Amazon, it's probably going to be less on Amazon.
Yeah. Yeah. Or if you're lucky enough to find it in a reseller like Noble Knight Games or something.
I like Noble Knight Games a lot, but I notice that a lot of stuff on Noble Knight Games is a lot of money there.
Yeah, they do. They have some really weird pricing there. I they're my main source for games, but I do sometimes, if I see something that sounds excessive, I will go Google it and just see what other retailers are offering it. Because, yeah, I think it's because they have maybe more than one person doing the pricing.
Maybe. I'm looking
most of the time they're reasonable, but on occasion they you know, I remember seeing a copy of Yakento's Time Ship, one of the worst role-playing games ever. A great concept but a horrible system and worse introductory modules. But they were like wanted $70 for it.
Man.
And I'm like, I'd almost give away my copy.
I'm actually looking at it on Amazon right now. It's called The Ultimate Toolbox by AEG, and it's paperback. It's 400 pages, my apologies. And to buy it right now, new, it's $43.95.
And that's new.
And here's what doesn't make sense. Used, $87.69.
$87?
That's what it says on Amazon. For used copies is more than the new copy.
That's bizarre.
I have no idea what some of these prices. I think people make up prices on Amazon when they sell stuff.
Yeah, because if that's for a reseller, then Amazon doesn't have a control over what they ask for, you know.
And then they have the Toolbox by AEG, which is the first version of it, which is only brand new, $51. And that one came out in 2003, and that's only about 200 pages. And I never had that one, but it's rated 4 stars here on Amazon, so you can get it.
200 pages, to me, that's rather more digestible than 400.
$10 used. That's more feasible.
Cool. Now that's something I might pick up.
Yeah, actually, the Toolbox by AG is not bad. You could probably use it quite a bit in your campaign.
Okay. Well, one last bit on this subject, if I may.
Sure.
There's another danger that I've discovered.
What's that?
I don't know how many other people, if you can tell me if you've ever had this happen.
Mm-hmm.
As a DM, have you ever had a player come up with a backstory that was so cool that you read or listened to and thought, yeah, I could build an adventure off this, an adventure off this and this, and have this eventually draw the party into this?
Yeah, I've done that with
and then,
a bunch of games.
You know, that character gets killed, and your gut reaction is, damn, I wanted to do this, this, and this. I can't let them die. But at the same time, you want to let the dice fall where they may, you know?
Yeah, I know. I know what you're saying totally. I've had players in past groups that have done elaborate stories, and I've read them. And I'd be like, oh, this is a good idea. And I'd write it down on a notepad and remember for later on. And then they wind up dying, yeah.
Yeah. Do you manage to resist the urge to give them to have some deus ex machina to bring him back? Or
no.
Or a MacGuffin?
No, I'm where the dice lie, they lie.
In honesty, I've done 50-50. I've had four situations where that's happened. Twice I just sucked it up and let them die. The other two I found, I mean, they came back alive. They lost all their stuff. They took a constitution point hit, but I did bring them back.
No, my group will tell you I have no problem killing them.
Well, I wouldn't have a problem killing them if they just hadn't had such a brilliant backstory for this character and I was going to use it to make their life a living hell for the next 6 months of game time.
Mm.
But, yeah, it's a toughie.
Yeah, what are you going to do?
Kill them, apparently.
Yeah, apparently. All right. PCs with backgrounds, with personalities, games that make your PCs make backgrounds and personalities, that and more. We think we've covered it, and we've done quite a bit on it. I think we've beaten the dead horse. What do you think?
Oh, yeah.
All right, let's go into random encounters next.
Random encounters.
So, random encounters this week. Continuing along with our theme of last week, we're going to look upon maybe a different dragon this week, a more neutral dragon, of the blue dragon.
A lightning dragon.
Pew, pew. Yeah, lightning dragon. Bad sound effect, but whatever.
Pew, pew, pew.
Yeah, we're going to cover all the dragons in one episode, but we figured that'd be way too much to do that. We figured just split it up and
Just cover a dragon each.
Yeah, do one dragon type from each alignment sphere. So.
Yeah.
So this
and
week,
to be honest.
Go ahead.
To be honest, I have to admit, even though the red dragon is the most iconic for Dungeons and Dragons, I've always liked the blue dragon more.
Because he's different.
And I don't know why. He just strikes me as more intelligent. I know logically there's no real reason for that, game statistic-wise.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it's just in his behavior.
Yeah.
And maybe because he has flexibility in his alignment more than, say, the red.
He does, huh?
Chaotic or neutral, depending on which version you're looking at.
Well, this week, I do Molve and Mensur, so this week I'm going to look at the Molve, because last week I had the Mensur book open. I'm looking at the Molve stats for it right now, and they list him as being just a plain neutral. So there's nothing more. And he hit, and the breath weapon is a lightning, as Mike had already said. And they said he can be found in a desert or a plain area.
Yeah, and I'm not familiar enough with Arabic culture to know is this an actual beastie from, you know, Middle Eastern legend, a dragon that could breathe electricity, or is this just, you know, well, we've got one in each environment, so how about we have one breathe electricity and we'll stick him in a desert? <You know?
laughs> I don't know. Thinking about it, a blue dragon, it sounds really cool to actually have that as armor as well. Because, you know, people like pulling the plates off dragon for armor. Think about a blue plate mail armor from the blue dragon. Wouldn't that be some type of, like, trophy, don't you think?
Yeah. Yeah, and as armor, it would be, I think, more practical than the black armor from a black dragon. You know, because how many, you know, high-level wizards, what do they have? They have fireballs or they have lightning bolts.
Yeah. And it's a zero armor class for the blue dragon, according to Molve. So, that's not too shabby there for a dragon. Considering the blue dragon, according to the Molve rules, is the third most powerful dragon they have. Behind the red and the infamous gold dragon, which we'll talk about next episode. So with this dragon being neutral, is there different ways to play this dragon? Can you just play him as the big old monster dragon shooting lightning all over the place and killing stuff? Or do you play him as the kind, gentle dragon that's just shunned away from society because of he's a dragon and he just wants to be left alone?
I'd actually go for the third, which is... And this implies because he hangs out in arid, wasted regions, or, you know, deserty type regions, is he predominantly just wants to be left alone.
Right.
He's not like Red that wants to, you know, level villages for fun and dinner. You know, he's just doing his thing. Maybe goes out every now and then to eat some mountain goats, or maybe attack a caravan, mostly for the horses for lunch or camels. But for the most part, you know, he's doing his thing. Leave him alone.
Yeah. He's the hermit dragon, pretty much.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he's... That doesn't mean he has to be, you know, kindly or gentle. He's just disinterested. On the other hand, you know, all dragons, they say, even, you know, in original, even if... even the good ones are, you know, greedy for treasure. So I suppose if you had some nice piece of something and you went to the blue dragon to maybe exchange for information. Yeah, I guess that's what I view him as. It's kind of a dragon equivalent of a sage. You know, you can go to, ask questions. If you bribe him enough, maybe he'll tell you. He probably won't eat you if you, you know, ask your question and go away and stop bothering him, but... Don't try to take advantage of him either, because he'll get a lightning bolt up the left nostril. You know,
he does have a 40% chance of talking according to the Molve rule. So,
yeah, which I think isn't that like 10% lower than red dragons?
Yeah, 10% lower.
Which, yep, that's the rules. But I disagree with it. I think they should be just as likely to talk.
Again, it's you're the DM. I mean, you don't have to actually sit there and roll. And then,
right.
Damn, there goes your whole story because you didn't roll. Who cares?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, But then I like most dragons talking, even the white ones. You know?
White
you
ones. Know,
you may not have a deep conversation with them, but, you know.
White ones with the 10% chance of talking. I don't know, I always liked the black dragons, in my opinion.
Yeah. I always wondered why they hung out in swamps, though.
Yeah, in the marsh, but we'll actually talk about
I would think a green dragon would enjoy marsh better, don't you think?
Nah, they want the jungle and the forest, guy.
But with chlorine gas and everything, you think that would...
I don't know.
No.
I don't know.
Who am I to argue with Gary Gygax? So.
That's right. Do not argue with the great one.
So, silence!
Silence, you infidel!
Stone the blasphemer!
That's right.
Next, I'll be making comments about the Almighty Joe.
Shh.
Daresn't speak his name.
That's right. He who shall not be named. He just started turning into Voldemort.
Or Hastur.
Yeah. So the Blue Dragon, I don't think I've ever used the Blue Dragon. I'm sitting here trying to think about that. I don't think I've ever used it, but I always thought they were kind of cool.
I've used them a couple of times, but I must say, for the most part, I don't run a whole lot of desert adventures. And that's really kind of where they fit.
Didn't someone write on our forum something about dragons, how they... I think it was... can't remember his username, but it starts with an F. And I think he was saying how him and his group figured out some way to, yeah, that's right, it was a disintegrate spell, and they would cast it, and if the dragon failed the saving throw, they decided that the dragon would not die or be affected by the spell.
The wizard, the magic user, could then hold it at bay long enough for the dragon to surrender.
Right, and then he would pull the spell back, and the dragon would submit and surrender and be forever in the magic user's, you know, power.
Yeah.
And he explained.
Well, I don't think it was forever, but yeah, basically obligated.
Yeah.
But then that was the campaign with 250th level magic user.
Wow, I know, I saw that. He said 250th level magic user, 150th level fighter. I was like, holy cow, is that possible?
I'll admit, when I was in junior high... in Washington School in Greenville, Mississippi, we did have a campaign that was that over the top, or very over the top. Though I will admit, we never had anybody over 100th level. But yeah, I had a magic user who had a castle on the moon, and basically it turned it into a Death Star. Yeah, I think everybody at one time or another, at least back then, had their mandatory over-the-top campaign, and it's like, okay, nah, we're not going to do that anymore.
Yeah, I think I remember doing fudging numbers and just boosting up characters just because I wanted to have higher level characters, but I don't think I've ever gone to 250th level.
No.
I never heard anybody doing that, and when I saw that, I was like, holy crap, 250th level.
Well, I think even he realizes that was... Yeah. Way over the top. But yeah, I think, you know, you're in junior high, you know. It's what Gary called Dungeons and Beavers.
Yeah, yeah.
Just anything's possible and a wild ride. And a wild time was had by all, pretty much. But yeah, I liked Blue Dragons, but I have not used them enough.
No, they're one of the most underused dragons out there.
Possibly, because I have heard and I've read in modules, I've seen white dragons, black dragons, red dragons coming out your ears.
Green.
Green, I would say, is maybe the second least used, but I think even green's used more than blue.
Yeah.
Because you can get that whole cunning manipulation thing going there. Not to mention they're in forests. And how many adventurers go through forests? Like, all of them?
Yeah, like 99.9%
of them. 99% of them, yeah.
Blue
Dragons, that's a pity, because I think it's a good dragon. I mean, a good dragon to use, not a good dragon. Though I suppose with neutral, you could have one if you wanted.
Hey, I know a good place they probably could have used the Blue Dragon in Thundar the Barbarian.
Absolutely.
Didn't most of those dragons have lightning?
Assuming it wasn't like a big mechanical dragon from Walt Disney World or something that a sorcerer has animated to use as his minion or something.
Didn't most of the dragons on there have lightning as their special attack?
That or some sort of like energy beam.
Yeah, they weren't blue, but I remember them shooting out something like that.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it was lightning. I gotta get that on DVD. I miss Thundar the Barbarian.
Thundar. Bum bum bum.
Ookla, Ariel, ride.
Yeah.
Because they couldn't know how to ride, know to ride without him informing them, of course.
Well, he was the leader, dude. Come on.
Even though Ariel had like 10 times the smarts.
And the magic that he didn't like.
Yeah, but it was okay when she did it.
Yeah, well, because it was good, so.
And Ariel was hot, so, you know. How what?
She was a cartoon, Mike.
Nevertheless. Okay, listeners, write in. Tell me if you found Ariel hot or, she's a cartoon character. Who cares?
All right.
We'll see how many emails we get.
Save or Die Podcast, gmail.com. That's your email address. Or go right to the site and you have a contact form that you can anonymously email us and tell us how much you think she's hot and not leave a return email address.
Or go to Dragon's Foot.
Yeah.
So there you go.
All right.
Anyway, cool. Dragons. How would you use a blue dragon differently from a red dragon?
Well, I think we've discussed that. Didn't we?
Have we? Other than the desert, and possibly as good or more intellectually, how would you use a blue dragon?
I don't know. Honestly, I don't think I'd really... I think I would
make
use
a difference?
Well, other than the fact of a red dragon being the evil bastard dragon that he is, but I think I would use the blue dragon as more of an information dragon.
Yeah.
I kind of like that idea that you said that the PCs have a powerful magical item or something that's worth something. Go to where they think this dragon's lair may be and go and say, we need some information about such and such. You're the ancient one in this land, and here's what we offer in return. Maybe the dragon will give them the information they seek.
Yeah. And you don't run into the original D&D problem with sages in Brown Book, which was... A lot of times, PCs would ask a sage a question, get the answer, and he wants his payment, and they'd gut him.
Yeah.
I know for a while they gave sages the ability to curse with their dying breath, which was obviously a way of trying to get around that. PCs just, give us an answer. Okay, well, hope you don't need to know something again, because you just whacked the only sage in 100 miles.
Yeah.
But... one lair that I would do for a blue dragon that I think would be awesome, in that desert area, maybe near a craggy mountain,
mm-hmm.
a mountain with lots of iron deposits. So in the cave, if it blasted its lightning bolt, even if it misses, when it hits the ground, Zark!
Yeah. Zap everything on the mountain.
Yeah, or at least anything near one of the, obviously there's stone and then there's iron, then there's stone, but, I mean, even a miss could potentially do some damage to a spread out party.
Yeah, well, that's not a bad idea.
Yeah. Cool.
Alright. I guess we should probably solicit ideas from what people think, too.
Yeah, what do y'all think? Obviously we've got something wrong, or, we haven't thought of something, so... send in your ideas.
And let's head into the last segment of the night.
These Dungeons & Dragons games, products of your imagination.
Products of your imagination. We didn't have anything original from a new person to review, so we went back to a suggestion that someone had asked a long time ago to go through the original modules that came out at the time. So... we're going to take a look at this week and do a quick talk about B2, Keep on the Borderlands.
The original module.
Return again, but the original Keep on the Borderlands, B2, written by Gary Gygax himself. The man, the myth, the legend.
Not Little Keep on the Borderlands from Hackmaster either. that one there was for Nick.
Aww.
Anyway.
I didn't know they made one.
Huh?
I didn't know there was a Little Keep on. I'm not a Hackmaster person, so I don't know.
Oh, yeah. They created their version of Keep on the Borderlands was called Little Keep on the... like Little House on the Prairie.
No, that's not cool.
But much, much bigger. I mean, this was literally a mini campaign. I only read bits of it. I never really read it cover to cover, but yeah, you know, it had some good ideas, had the usual goof, but you know. But anyway, the original V2. Now the copy I'm looking at is the one that came with the Holmes set, 1980.
Right, is that the purple covered one?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was what was replaced. They originally had B1. It was in Search of the Unknown. Am I saying that right? Yeah, Search of the Unknown.
Yeah. Search of the Unknown.
By Mike Carr, right? Yeah.
Yep.
Mike Carr.
A good module.
Good module. That was the original module that was out with the box set or the home set. And then they came out with B2, Keep on the Borderlands by Gary Gygax, which set up basically every module thereafter for the rest of D&D's life, pretty much.
Yeah.
They followed this format ever since. Basically, Gary wrote it and said, this is what every module is going to look like, and you people are going to follow it. Which I'm pretty sure is what happened.
Yeah. And it's a good format. I think, you know, I like B1, but I think the advantage to B2 is that you not only have a dungeon, but you've got a little mini campaign.
Yeah.
You've got your quote-unquote village, which is the keep. You've got the dungeons, which are the caves of chaos. And you've got lots of wilderness encounters in the area.
Yeah, it's also a good module for first through third level to get your feet wet in D&D if you haven't played it ever before, or if you're returning for a long time away from the game.
Mm-hmm.
It's a perfect module.
And it's like B1 in that there are quite a few pages on how to DM,
mm-hmm.
what terminologies mean. I mean, it's the only module I know of with a glossary.
Yeah.
How many of those, you know, just for utterly new people, so they, you know, they don't know what a battlement is, or a palisade, or a polearm, you know? It's right there in the back. Every one of the words even have asterisks by them, so, you know that word is in the glossary, and you can just jump right back and look.
And I like the fact that it's written so that a new DM can take a look at it and understand how to play the game along the way. So, because I've known quite a few people to pull out D&D back in the day and play it like as if it was like a board game, thinking that they could just play it like that.
Yeah.
And I could foresee a bunch of people sitting around, maybe like an older brother and his brother and a bunch of friends just saying, all right, we're going to play D&D and let's pick out this module here. Everybody, here's your characters and this is what happens. I can see that happening with this.
Oh, yeah. Well, you got your pre-gens. It's all in one box. So, yeah, it could very easily be done that way.
So what's the basic story behind this, Mike?
Basically, you have a keep of humans and various other types on the Borderlands, and it being the Borderlands, it's got a lot of wilderness area. You get the impression you're far, far away from any civilized areas,
mm-hmm.
and danger lurks around every corner. And the theory here, basically your players start at the gates of the keep, trying to, you know, basically tell the corporal of the guard what they need to know to let you in. And Gary even writes there specifically, you know, be sure to note that anything the players say during that scene is what their characters say.
Mm-hmm.
And I so basically that. In a way it's kind of I think Gary put that in there as a get your feet wet in the whole idea of role-playing. Because it doesn't say that really much in any of the other possible encounters in the game, just that very first one.
I don't think right, go on.
Yeah, you're giving the idea of role-playing a character a shot.
I don't think I remember ever seeing that in any other module, period.
No. No, I don't think so. And much as I love B1, and I do, you don't have that kind of situation in there. But then you don't have a quote-unquote base of operations in be one. You start at the outside of the dungeon. Which, to be fair, was how a lot of games started originally in the 70s.
Yeah, there wasn't this whole, you know, meet up, meet everybody, then figure out what you want to do type thing. It was, here's your characters, and here's the door you have to start at.
Right, and you've decided to go into this dungeon and get riches, kill things and take their stuff.
Yeah, it was a basic, simple background of, you guys got together because you heard there was a lot of treasure and gold here, you both are all on the same level, and you're standing in front of the door now to go inside. Continue.
What do you do?
Yeah.
Pretty much.
So go ahead, Mike.
I'd say, also, though, you know, a lot of D&D adventures were put out before TSR did. Most notably, We Warriors putting out Palace of the Vampire Queen, and then Judges Guild putting out a lot of stuff. And that is something that struck me, the way Gary was describing the background of the area, you know, the Lonely Keep, the wild evil around them, humanity being kind of under siege by forces of evil, reminded me a lot of Judges Guild's Wilderlands, actually.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I can't help but wonder if that had an influence on Gary's... I know he based some of it on that novel, The House on the Borderlands.
Yeah, I've heard that too.
Yeah, but I wonder if the whole idea of an embattled humanity he got from Wilderlands. Don't know.
Wow.
Yeah.
I was looking at the Keep on the Borderlands reviews that people wrote here while you were talking about that, Mike. And this person apparently has never played the game properly. Because this is the review they put. As their first basic D&D module, this module helped explain the methods of game mechanics to the new DM and any new players. It allows the DM to expand the module and gives it a great start for a campaign. Of course, this is one of the great original D&D systems, second edition.
Maybe he means second edition of the Holmes box.
Okay, because he just puts like second edition, and I'm like, what?
Maybe.
I don't think so. Not that I remember. Okay. I think I've played through this module once as a player.
I was about to say, I can't count the number of times I've run this module for Holmes, for Moldvay, for Original, for AD&D. I mean, it's perfect for starting without needing a whole lot of brain power. Although, it's funny how, and I'm one of them, old schoolers who don't like the idea of box text in a module.
Yeah, I hate that.
Yeah, and yet... it's not in boxes, but many of the campaign, especially around the keep, Gary has, in quotes, you know, what, at least implied, what the DM should be reading to the players about a particular area, which you can say is box text.
Yeah, I guess you could say that. That's the one thing I really stayed away from modules for, because I hated that. You get to the module, you're reading it, and it's just like, okay, read the following to the players. And there's this long, giant box that goes on for a page and a half. It's like, I don't want to read all this.
And your players don't want to sit there listening to you monologuing it either.
I like the B2s, the B1s, all these classic modules. You're just like, here's room area one. In this room, you can describe however you want the following.
Yeah, and Gary puts that in here, too. You know, furniture is not described, the walls, painting is not described. You know, you're expected to come up with that as needed.
Right. That's what I like about these old school modules. Not that there was anything wrong with the box modules, I just didn't like reading all that.
Yeah, I think it was... I know there's a school of thought that says it helps new DMs, but I just... I don't like them. I never did, even when I was a new DM.
I used to play in games when later on when we started using modules, and I'd sit there with them, and the DM would be reading, and I'd be like, ugh. Yep.
Yep.
Okay,
yep. I'm going to go get a Coke. This is going to be a while.
Yep.
Yeah.
Pass the Cheetos.
Yeah.
And he'd be reading and reading and reading, and he'd finally get done with it, and everyone would be sitting there, like, dead silence, and someone would be like, what did he say?
Mm-hmm.
What do we have to do?
What do we do? Can someone just break that down into basically, you know, what the important points of this?
Just summarize it. I don't know. Of course, when I was playing a less intelligent character, I'd pick out the, like, really silly words out of what he said.
Like, and emphasize those.
Oh, wow. Like, there was this one campaign where one of my friends, she was DMing for, like, the very first time, so we had to pick on her, of course. That's, like, the rite of passage with new DMs. So she wrote up this whole big elaborate speech, and I was playing a dumb cavalier, a knight, pretty much, and my friend was playing a dumb paladin.
Mm-hmm.
We were the dumb duo, and... she said that we want you to seek ye out and find whatever Lord. But we're like, seek yum? We'll find seek yum. And we ran around the keep going, seek yum, where are you? The whole entire time. Breaking doors and stuff like that. Of course, not breaking doors that were hand carved mahogany.
I have a half ogre fighter. Alchemist that I play like that. Yes, alchemist. He is a zero level alchemist. He's really not an alchemist, but he's convinced he's an alchemist. Mm-hmm. So he makes potions out of all sorts of horrid things and then tries to get party members to drink him.
Nice. Because
it's good for them.
Nice.
Oh, he's poisoned. Me get potion here.
Now he's dead. Oops.
Well, once it worked simply because it was an epic act, you know, and that cleared his system.
Oh, cool.
But yeah, 99 times out of 100, no, it's not. It's going to make him sick or worse. But he is convinced he can make potions.
So overall, how many dragons are going to rate this? Mike?
Gosh.
The infamous B2 module as Mike sits and contemplates.
I didn't even get to talk about Bree Arc.
Oh, go on, though. I thought you were done. I'm sorry.
Well, no, that was just a particular thing. And this is also like B1. They have the rumors table.
Mm.
And my favorite is, you know, learning about Bree Arc.
Mm-hmm.
That's just an iconic term. Yes. Old Grognard, you go up to him and say, Bree Arc. They know you're a fellow old schooler.
Bree Arc,
everybody knows Bree Arc. I won't go into details because it could give away stuff in the module, but Bree Arc.
I think at this point, if we're giving away anything about B2, then this person really needs to go back and read B2.
yeah. But anyway, it's one of the rumors that if you say it, you know, that's goblin, or if goblins say Bree Arc, it's... their word for surrender. Now, is it true? Is it false? I'm not going to say.
Dun, dun, dun.
Bree Arc. Anyway, dragons. 5 out of 5.
Wow, 5 out of 5 for Mike.
And I'm not just a Gary fan, not just a Gary fanboy. I mean, I can't think of anything this module is missing.
All right. And, What would Liz rate this? Hello, my name is Liz. I'd rate this a 4 out of 5. Okay, thank you, Liz.
don't do that again. That's scary.
You're going to make me show up from beyond the grave.
Oh no! Hey, Liz is here.
She snuck in.
So, Liz, what would you rate instead of the fake Liz rating the module 4 out of 5?
B2, keep on the borderlands.
You probably have me pegged pretty well, and I will admit it is solely because my character got bitten by a giant centipede on our way out of the keep towards the Caves of Chaos, didn't even make it to the caves, had to turn around and go back to the keep because I failed my save.
I'm sick for X days. I forgot to mention that. Thank you for bringing that up.
and I've been bitter ever since. 4 out of 5 dragons.
So I
that's not even a set encounter. It was a wandering monster.
Nice. So the real Liz agrees with the fake Liz, and it's 4 out of 5.
Apparently.
I'm going to go with a 4 out of 5 also. I like this module, but I wouldn't rate it a 5. I don't think I've rated any module a 5 yet, so.
Well, that or I'm much better at doing a Liz impersonation than you are.
I don't know. What do you think?
Anyway, so that makes it, let's see, 13.3.
There we go.
4.3 dragons.
With 4 votes, 2 Liz votes, and Mike and me, we get a 4.3 for this module.
Yep.
And I think that's going to wrap the show this week.
Yeah.
A almost entirely Liz-less show. Is she still there?
Yes.
Hi, Liz. Is she not talking to me now?
She's not going to talk.
She's not going to talk.
Oh, all right. I'll talk one more time.
Yeah, it's the goodbye. We all got to say goodbye.
Goodbye. Sorry I wasn't here for this episode.
Yeah, with a special cameo appearance by Liz this week. She'll be back next week. Or actually, there'll be no show next week.
Or will she?
Dun, dun, dun. Dun. Our next show actually will probably be a feedback show because we have a lot of emails to go over. Probably be in 2 weeks unless we can get together during the week sometime.
That'll be a toughie. Most of our weeks are pretty tied up. But we'll try.
Yeah,
who knows? We might do it.
And I'll release this out for everybody. So let's take our torn shirt and our backpack, throw it over our shoulder, and thumb outs, and see if someone will pick us up this week.
Bill Bixby our way out of this adventure.
That's right. And Liz is here, so she can remind me of the catchphrase.
Run while you still can.
That's right. Run while you still can. Can you make the save? And that's going to say goodbye, everybody. Have a good night.
Free Arc.
Good night.
If you have any comments, please email saveordiepodcast@gmail.com or visit saveordie at saveordie.info. Follow the cast on Facebook / Save or Die Podcast, or follow them on Twitter @TheEvilDM.